You're listening to an encore presentation of Unreserved. It originally aired in the spring of 2023 as part of Canada's celebrations of National Indigenous Peoples Day. Enjoy. You feel that? That's the music mashup of Joshua DePerry, also known as Classic Roots. The Anishinaabe DJ blends powwow beats with electronica to create powwow techno. Joshua is one of the indigenous artists we'll meet who mash up traditional with contemporary as a way to carry on culture.
You got to dance to your music. You got to feel it, you know, like that's how I see it. And everyone gets into it.
Danse Anine, Buju, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, from disco to hip-hop to powwow beats and back again, Classic Roots is all about love, healing, and dancing.
Music is a good way to heal. That's always my goal.
And Carrie Okemau learned how to beadwork from her grandma and aunties.
I feel like when you connect to the art, it connects us with our grandmothers.
Inspired by the bright floral patterns, the Cree designer created her own fabric line. Plus, three friends of Unreserved drop by to share their suggestions of what music to listen to, TV shows to watch, and what books to read this summer. So let's get this party started. First up in our hot summer celebration is our favorite Indigenerd. These days, Sonia's been busy writing for TV and working on her first documentary. Who better to ask which Indigenous talent to watch for on the small and big screen?
My name is Sonia Ballantyne, and I am a writer, a filmmaker, and general cultural nerd. And I absolutely adore movies and TV, and I watch a lot of them.
His Excellency would like to ask if any of the residential school survivors would like to take this opportunity to be heard by His Holiness.
My mother would like to speak in her language. Eileen Spears,
Nisikasun, Nya. So my first recommendation is Bones of Crows. It's directed and written by Marie Clements. And as a person with a family who have gone to residential school, it's often very difficult for me to watch content based around residential school trauma and that experience, just because it's so close to us, and like it is just very difficult to watch. And so I ended up watching this film for an event in Winnipeg called The Decolonizing Lens, and otherwise I'm sad to say that would be the only way I would watch it.
Careful, you're gonna see things you never forget. You gotta keep it inside you.
But the thing was, when I saw it, I was just massively blown away by Marie's writing, by the choices she made in regards to the characters, because it's basically a look at this one character who, throughout her whole life, through residential school, through her becoming a code talker in World War II, to her losing her husband, who is a veteran of World War II, it took a lot of turns I didn't expect, and I was really overwhelmed by how joyful it was. It's still very rare for us to have content about being Indigenous that is about hope. My second recommendation would be Acting Good. So Acting Good is a half-hour comedy that follows Paul, who is returning to his home reserve after failing in the city.
Word is, he just got home from Winnipeg.
Hey, everybody. I'm back.
And so the show follows his various misadventures back home on his reserve of Gross Lake and how his family reacts to having him back in town.
Everyone's going to make a big deal about how I'm back home.
And one of my favorite things about Acting Good is that Paul, the lead character, is the villain of the show. But the best thing about it is he never wins.
No, bro. When you're the movie man, you got responsibilities.
Season 2 is currently filming right now, so it'll you can get caught up before the show premieres in, later in the fall. My last recommendation is self-serving. I was one of the writers on a show called Builder Brothers Dream Factory. which is a preschool little kid show about these two twins and their best friends who go about their home community and basically make and design these projects that help them deal with whatever problem they have in that episode. And my episode Orange Shirt Day was written about the character of Nell finding out her grandmother was a residential school survivor and how she wasn't allowed to dance at residential school. And I remember when I first pitched this episode, I was worried that people were going to be upset that, like, well, we can't have a kid show about residential school. Like, what can we do about that? I know that there's a lot of controversy about, like, how much should kids know about residential school. Things like Orange Shirt Day help make it accessible to kids without having to go into, like, the darker parts of that history. Not that they shouldn't know, but it's, like, it's a good stepping stone. I'm really excited to share it with the world because it really helped me deal with my own anger and my own terror and my own fear about finding out that my own family had gone to residential school. And what does that mean to me as a survivor of it? Because, like, one of the biggest fears that Mel has in this episode is that she wants to make everything perfect to honor her grandmother. And in the end, what her grandmother loves is that her granddaughter made this beautiful sculpture of her that lets her dance again. And Mel, as a character, was a Cree girl I wanted to be when I was 10 years old. So, like, it was a real honor to write her, and it was a real honor to basically have my first job as a freelancer, as a full-time writer, be for a Cree girl I didn't create. It felt like fate. So, like, that's why I'm recommending that show.
Thanks, Sonia. Little Cree girls unite! This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild, and I got my party pants on. How about you? Kerry Okemau has been beading and sewing powwow regalia for over 20 years. She learned the traditional craft from her grandmother and aunties. But whenever she looked in fabric stores, she could never find what she was looking for. So, inspired by her own family's traditional floral beadwork, she created her own fabric with a contemporary twist. Now her designs show up in many other creations, from jewelry to ribbon skirts. And the possibilities for her bright flower designs are limitless. From a business perspective, it's a huge success. But for Kerry, it's also an opportunity to share her culture and the powwow way of life. Kerry, welcome to Unreserved.
Bonjour. How are you?
I'm good. So tell me, what made you want to incorporate your designs onto fabrics?
I guess it started during the pandemic. I was on maternity leave. I needed a way to provide a little bit more for my family. I just always wanted to take the art that my late grandmother and my late auntie showed me. I always wanted to take that a little bit farther. And I started to imagine, what would these florals look like on a t-shirt? What would these florals look like on a hoodie? I also saw this opportunity of needing, let's just say, auntie-size t-shirts, auntie-size hoodies, and I wanted to make them beautiful. So I taught myself how to do digital designs over the pandemic, and I started to create the digital designs, and then I figured out how to put the designs on hoodies and t-shirts, and then that led to the textile designing.
Can you describe for somebody who might not have seen your designs, like, what is it based in? What does it look like?
Yeah, so it comes from my 20 plus years of beading and sitting with my late grandmothers and seeing them bead these beautiful flowers, seeing them use beautiful colors. And I wanted to capture that by creating these flowers with a dark outline and a lighter fill-in. So I wanted them to be characteristic of Meshkigo Ininu style of flowers. I really tried my hardest to learn the style, to study not only my own community's florals, but other communities' styles, but I always wanted to be true to where I grew up. And also learning another style of the Anishinaabe, which is a different style of florals. So you'll see a little bit of variety in my work with the Cree florals and the Ojibwe florals.
Ah, that's beautiful. What kind of things have you seen made with your fabrics?
I've seen little children's outfits being made from my designs. So I worked for the community of Muscogees, and we hosted our first elders gathering, and I walk in and right on all the tabletops was table runners of my designs. And I was just floored. Like, it just absolutely touched my heart. And like, so that was like added as an extra for the elders in the community that I worked with. So that was beautiful. That was like a dream come true. On the emotional side, like, I've did big orders for my home community, where they wanted to pay respect to one of my relatives that have passed on. They put my floral designs on that. And that was very emotional for me, because I never thought that I would be being called upon to represent my home community and honoring such important people. I'm just blessed.
Yeah, that's beautiful that you got such loving support from community, you know. What does that feel like to see your fabric, you know, used in other people's creative projects and, you know, really meaningful things like, you know, your own community and the elders?
It brings me back to this one interview that a seamstress did when the fabric was first released, and she talked about how far she would come to buy the fabric, and she was so happy that she came upon my fabric. And she said, "I recognize the florals. I love the colors." So she got exactly what I was trying to do. She said, "It reminded me of my grandmother." And that's exactly what I wanted to have embedded always in my work, is what I was taught.
And of course, your designs, as you mentioned earlier, were based sort of grew out of your bead work and your sewing. When did you first learn to sew in bead?
I actually started crafting at a very young age. My mother got me doing loom beading at 14. And I didn't start full-time sewing until I was 18. So I've probably been beading for about 20 years now. And growing up in Winnipeg, we didn't have a big extended Powell family. So it was really hard for me to find people that supported me to dance. So I just taught myself. My auntie taught me how to sew, and we made my first outfit. So I've been sewing and beading ever since I was a teenager.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. How has healing, how has beadwork and learning how to sew and make your regalia and these wonderful floral designs, how has it been healing for you?
I think the very art of beading and sewing is healing. And I think it's a definite field that needs to be sought after more for our young people, because that's exactly what it did for me when I was in a dark place. I remember this one elder saying to me, "Find a hobby." I was like, "All right, what is a hobby?" So I had to find out what I wanted to do and what I could do. And my other auntie actually bought me a beading kit. So I was really lucky to come from a big, loving, supportive family on my mother's side. And she bought me a beading kit. Everything was in there, beads, thread. And I just remember starting a project, and I remember not knowing what to do really. And I remember making it, and I remember finishing it. And that was really healing for me, because it helped provide me with direction in my life.
Well, how did the art of that, the practice of beadworking and creating these wonderful designs, how did that help you through that dark time? What was it about beadworking and sewing that, you know, helped you?
I think it was reclaiming what my grandmothers did. It was me realizing that it was okay to make a pair of moccasins, and it was okay to sell them, and it was okay to buy groceries. That's how I was taught that the old ladies provided for their families. So it made me look back a generation or two. And I remember during my research, I came upon a conversation with this one museum curator. They found a piece of beadwork, and at the time, 20 years ago, they dated it 150 years old, and it was from the God's Lake Narrows community. So I just really felt like the action of like looking back really healed me. One beater that is a mentor, a role model to me, Nipi, and she said, don't ever forget the grandmothers are with you when you're beading. The grandmothers are with you when you're sewing, and they will give you direction and they will come to you. So I think when you acknowledge them, they're there and they help you. And I remember just recently a time where I'm sitting down there, I'm looking at my grandmother's old designs, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like it was just for like a personal project. And then I just sat there, and then I traced my grandmother's floral pattern, and I just felt so at ease, comforted, welcomed, all that beautiful stuff. So I feel like when you connect to the art, it connects us with our grandmothers.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so in carrying that on and sort of modernizing it and making it available as a textile and a fabric, do you see that as still sort of a continuation of that story and of that, you know, that creative energy?
For sure, because I've learned to always have a balance. I learned to honor the teachings, but I had to ask my family for permission to share our family's floral designs. And I remember at one point I was going to just like opt out, pull out of Marshall's deal. And I asked my cousin, who was also trained by our late grandmother, our late auntie. And I just said, I don't know if I want to do this. Do we want to put our family's florals out there? And she said, yes. She said, you need to. She said, I want you to put God's River on the mark. So I always think about that. Like, there's so much beauty in Northern Manitoba. And I feel a lot of the times our voices are not heard at a national level, provincial level. And like, I grew up in God's River and I'm so proud to be from there. The people are so beautiful, caring and loving, and they taught me this beautiful art. So that's why I decided to go through with the Marshall's deal. And then with that, I said, all right, so I want to be a spokesperson in an artistic way for my community, because they gave me the heads up. I also found myself wanting a certain type of fabric and a certain style, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I would go for hours and hours at Fabricland. Me and my husband, we powwow all summer long, and I make outfits for people and my daughter. And I had this idea of what I wanted, needed, and I just got sick of driving around for 5 hours. So now I make what I need.
Yes, that's amazing. Now, you just mentioned that you had entered into a deal with Marshall's Fabrics to create some of your textiles, but now you're about to be available in a lot more stores. What can you tell us about your new fabric deal?
I am going to be working with Siltex, and they just shared with me a couple samples. So they're going to be relaunching my first design, and they're also going to be printing out my second design, which they have on their social media pages, and going to be completing my third design. We're just in the drafting phases. So they will be a variety of designs in different colors and a ribbon. I'm so excited. They're going to put my flowers on a ribbon.
Oh, that's so exciting. So exciting. So much success. How does all of this success land with you?
Still in shock. I still have my 9-to-5 job, and I'm very blessed to have a beautiful Powell family out here in Alberta. They've been really supportive and influential for my art as well, because there's this big, beautiful powwow scene that we have out here. Every weekend we're out there powwowing, and you see some of the top outfits and beadwork out there. And because of my husband's drum group, we've been able to travel in the States and Canada, and I just see such remarkable beadwork and sewing out there. So that has been one of my inspirations as well, bringing it to the contemporary mode. I would love to see what people need, and I know what it feels like to be looking for a certain type of fabric or a certain type of supply. And right away, the entrepreneurial spirit comes in and I get to working on that project.
Yeah. How do you hope that your growing success inspires others around you?
I work at it every day. I still have my 9-to-5. So I work within an Indigenous community south of Edmonton. And every day I can talk to a student, I tell them, you need to learn business. You need to learn the business of business. You need to hone in on your artistic abilities. You need to take that art class. I wouldn't even call it what I try and do. It's just what I naturally do. I do what I needed to hear at that young age with my art. And I also had people believe in my art too. So I just repeat what was instilled in me at a young age. And I think I'm a little bit too upfront with the kids that I work with, because I'm like, I know you're not going to listen to me, but I'm going to tell you this, and then I'm going to tell you I told you so. But I'm like, you need to invest in yourself, because your gift is doing art.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for sharing your story with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was so happy to hear from you guys, and I'm like, I feel like I know you, but I don't know you.
I'm your favorite cousin. Come on.
You are my favorite cousin that I never met growing up. I'm just so happy that our paths met and for this opportunity for me to talk about my art.
Gary Okamau is a designer and teacher for Mantosipi Cree Nation and Barron's River First Nation in Manitoba. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild, and I got my dancing shoes on. Speaking of, what do you get when you mix a little disco, add a dash of hip-hop beats, and stir in some powwow drums? Well, you get the powwow techno of classic roots.
The cool thing about Fancy Dancer, too, is that it is a contemporary style, so that's why I kind of add the top rock, the up rock, and going down and do almost a six step, a halfway six step, but also just having fun in that regalia and having fun and just healing.
We'll hear more from the mashup master in just a few minutes, but first, some other great music picks from our friend, Dave McLeod.
Tansé Bojou, Anin, Dave McLeod, Indigenous, and I'm a proud member of the Pine Creek First Nation, located in Manitoba, and it's my pleasure to share some thoughts on Indigenous music. I work on a program called the Indigenous Music Countdown, which is a top 40 show of all the newest Indigenous music. But I recently attended the International Indigenous Music Summit in Toronto, and there was over 40 artists there. There's one group, their Navajo group, made up of a brother and sister, Clayson and Janita Benali, and their band is called Siasin, and that translates to hope. They tour and travel with their family when they're doing shows, and there's a philosophy there of family values and bringing people forward and bringing understanding, particularly for the Navajo Nation. So this song is called Shine. It's very fitting, it's uplifting. Get yourself ready for this song, because when you hear it, you're gonna wanna hear it again. Another band I met was Bigazé at the International Indigenous Music Summit. And it's basically fronted by Adam Sturgeon, really cool guy, and Daniel Monkman as well. Some people might recognize him. He's in another group called Zune. They're both Anishinaabe artists. And what really caught my attention is they got this alternative rock vibe from the 90s. So if you went back to the early 90s, you know, these guys would have been my favorite band at that time, but thank goodness they're here with this sound that I completely love. And their debut album, Sewn Back Together, it was released last year, really cool. And the song is called Cherry Coke, and it comes on with this vibe, and it builds and builds, and they catch up to you. At the end, you're like, what's going on? I want to press play again. Where's the play button? Wait a second, there is no play button. We're listening to the radio. I'm gonna Google this right now. So Cherry Coke by Bigazé. Great tune to recognize the independent heart and soul in the indigenous music community. While at the summit, I also met a very young Comanche artist. She's known as Liv the Artist. Her name is Olivia Comachit. She's been playing music like since grade three. So, like, she learned the violin, the cello, piano, guitar, and she's got this great voice. She's got R&B influences going on, alternative rock. She's a one-person show. She does it all on her own through this looper. And when you watch it, it's like a mad scientist at work, because she's hopping and running all over, and it looks like something's not about to happen, but she makes it happen. And that's where you go, oh my gosh. So super talented, you know, young lady. And we're going to hear a lot more from her. I'm positive. She's in the works on a brand new album. She's going to have some music out there soon that people are going to be excited about. And you're going to say, hey, I heard about Olivia on CBC. The song is entitled Nasupiti.
The best therapy that you can have is art, drawing something. That's good therapy. Music is therapy also. It's all just fun. Challenges sometimes, it's hard work sometimes. You just make a fun out of it.
Hope you know as the sun's only time for catching me. Why do we separate? How to connect it? I feel
That is Nasupati by Olivia Comacheet. Thanks, Dave, for your suggestions. Hope to dance with you real soon. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. He's a fancy dancer who you might find strutting his traditional style at a powwow, but he's also a music producer and DJ. That's one of Classic Roots' mashups. Also known as Joshua DePerry, he blends powwow and electronic music to create powwow techno. And that's not his only mashup. During his live stream DJ sets, Joshua also wears his colorful regalia, his feather bustle bouncing to the heavy-hitting beats. Joshua, welcome to Unreserved.
Hi there. Bonjour.
Danse. So Joshua, how would you describe the power of music?
I'd say it's you can go through six dimensional layers into music, and you can hop in there and it becomes therapeutic. It takes your depression away, your anxiety, you know, that's your space. No one can take that away from you. So that's the power of music.
Do you feel like music is in your soul?
Definitely. Even in our culture too, you know, the Madewa gun, the heartbeat of that drum, you feel that heartbeat relating to Ake, Mother Earth. You know, you're connecting to both worlds, and, you know, no matter how you hate or love music, it's there.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. As you said, no powwow, and particularly the powwow drum, is considered the heartbeat of our nations. And, you know, we have a very strong connection to that. Tell me about the first time you were introduced to powwow and powwow music.
I was introduced when I was up in Thunder Bay. I'm born and raised in Thunder Bay. I always go to the Thunder Mountain powwow every year. So I had a grass outfit. My mom always tell me, like, I always had a lot of energy as I dance out there and listening to the drums. You know, as a kid, that's where my, you know, ADHD and hyperness go straight to the dance and use that energy for a good cause. That's how good the powwow is. And especially, you know, learning from your elders, and elders tell you about stories from, you know, 100 years ago. Like, the elders are there for us to learn and take that knowledge and give it to the next generation.
Mm. Do you remember the first time that you danced in your regalia and felt that connection and that beat?
Yeah. I mean, I can fast forward to when I was 14. That's when I got into breakdancing, and then I got into powwow. I went back to powwowing, and the very first time I had my first fancy outfit regalia, it was a blue one, and it was representing the healing. I remember just stepping into Lakehead University powwow, and soon enough, I was just blown away how, you know, felt good and how amazing it felt. Powwow is there. It's our home. That's, no matter how people say it is, it's our home. That's our that's our teachings, you know. We carry on to that next gen.
And you just mentioned there that you went from, you know, the arbor dancing powwow to maybe the streets and the sidewalk dancing breakdancing. How did you break into breakdancing?
I started. I did there. Yeah, you did. That's just awesome. I started b-boying probably like when I was 12 years old, and I remember just being at a youth dance and seeing these couple of guys just, you know, going down the floor, and then hearing Run DMC, hearing, you know, Two Bass, like Grandmaster Flash, like old school hip hop, and just seeing them going down the floor, and I'm just like, damn, this is something I like doing. Wow. And I went home and tried. My mom thought I was like cleaning the floors. She's like, what are you doing, Josh? And I'm like, oh, I was trying to break dance. She's like, what kind of dance is that? I'm like, you know, hip hop. Oh, that kind of stuff. Okay. So I got into b-boying and learned about the four elements of hip hop, and, you know, I just learned the history of it. And then soon enough, I just really got good at it and just really had fun. And probably 6 months later, I started to get into talent shows, and then got into, like, going to Indian French Center at the time in Sault Ste. Marie. And it actually did
help my balance and help my rhythm and help me, you know, groove as I go along, you know, just having fun. Wait, that's techno.
We're not there yet. Whoa,
not
whoa,
yet,
whoa.
Not yet. But yeah, I just learned about music. I learned how hip hop was and why b-boying came from like the streets of poverty in South Bronx, and, you know, just learning from the history and just learning about that and just looking back on it, and, you know, kind of made me went back into our history and learn about the fancy dance and learn about the powwow and learn about the history and why this drum was given to the men to, you know, settle down, don't act up no more. So like I started to see these things and started to see history and like, what? And that's when I, you know, burst out into different genres. And then I am proud that I still can break dance at 35.
Absolutely. You definitely have the rhythm in your body there. You went from powwow to breakdancing back to powwow. Would you say that was sort of your first mashup?
Yeah. And it was my very first mashup. And the cool thing about fancy dancing too is it is a contemporary style. So that's why I kind of add the you know, the top rock, the up rock, and, you know, going down and do like almost like a six step, like a halfway six step, but also just having fun in that regalia and having fun and just healing. And still, big reminder, stay grounded.
Yeah, for sure. Literally, right? And for the audience members who don't know what the grass dance is, could you walk them through it a little bit or dance them through it a little bit?
Well, grass dancing was based on a society out west, and they flatten out the grass to heal the lands where they put their wigwams and but also protecting us around that big circles as we dance or as we do our harvest. I feel like that was a very important thing for grass dancers to be out there and, you know, heal us, but also heal themselves too. And in the modern day times, they have contemporary style of grass dancers. They do a lot of more footwork, but they still related to the flatting out the grass and respecting the history. And then same goes for fancy dancing. So fancy dancing came from the Oklahoma area, from the Poca and the Pawnee tribe, and was rediscovered in 1882 at the Buffalo Bill, the Wild West show. It was brought back in that time, and then it got popular after in the 40s. And then from there, it became like a sport, became a competitive style of dance. But also, you know, there are some amazing fancy dancers out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you took the rhythm in your body that you expressed through hip hop, break dancing and hip hop powwow, and went into electronic music. How did that journey start for you?
I started to learn about techno, even house. I started to learn it from listening to disco music, like the Saturday Night Fever. You remember that album? Yeah.
Staying alive. Come on.
And then so
I was born in the 70s.
Exactly. So I'm just saying in that era, like I've learned that disco was starting to die down because of protesting, et cetera, et cetera. But in the 80s and 90s, I noticed that it became recycled from Chicago. In the black community, there was like some originators like Frankie Knuckles that actually brought back that disco sound, but it became house music. Technically, in the modern days, it actually is disco music, but we call it house, but it's underground. So that was the coolest thing. I was just like, it almost relates to hip hop, where you can sample and chop it up and put it together and make it like a danceable, but also keep the rhythm going, keep it the dance flowing. And so I learned from disco, people sampling, and then soon enough I got learn about drum machines, and I started to learn about how to sample with drum machines and stuff like that, with drums and kits. And I got into producing, and then I learned about how Detroit became the capital of techno. And then overall I just got drawn into it, and the dance music really was like, it was like the same as powwow. If the rhythm is 4-4 every time, that's what it was. And then just like, you can hear it. You can hear the Madewagen beating in your heart and just keep that rhythm going. And that's when I fell in love. And I said, bum a pee to hip hop, and I went straight to techno and house.
When did you make that connection, like the 4-beat and the connection and the similar feelings?
I started to connect when I was in high school in grade 9, and I remember having a music software that my buddy gave me in a computer room, and he says, hey, try this out, man. I was like, oh, what is this? And then it was a CD of a music software called Reason. So I learned about the music software and then learned about how to make music on computer, and just from there, like I've self-taught myself how to make a 4-4 beat. The rhythm, the kick and the snare, the hi-hats, percussions, and just learning and then listening to other songs having those references really helped me to get all my music out. And overall, it made me stay out of trouble. I didn't go out or do anything bad or anything. It just straight up, I just stayed at home and learn about music and learn about music theory on my own. I didn't go to no classes mm-hmm. whatsoever. I went straight to just, you know, making music from through a drum machine. And
Let's talk about your name a little bit. Where did the name Classic Roots come from?
Well, I'm a big fan of classical music, and mm-hmm. you know, I consider mm-hmm. anything classics, and then but also
like, you mean Beethoven classic, or yeah, do you mean like AC/DC classic?
Like, oh, both. It could be old school and then modern. Yeah, I said Beethoven for sure. I always tell myself this. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the next Beethoven and leave my songs here as I go in 100 years from now. So that's what I kind of make that good, strong connection with Beethoven. Yes. Yeah, I love classical music, even like scoring. I love John Williams. He's still kicking it. Hans Zimmer, classics like the Diphonics. Woo-wee. So yeah, I love my classic music. I love it. You know, like that's what keeps me driven. And then for roots, well, you know, I keep my native roots alive, never back down, but always keep that momentum going, you know, keeping those roots alive.
Speaking of roots, your music takes you all over the country and, you know, music venues and whatnot, but you've also spent time traveling to different reserves to share your style of music. Why is it important for you to do that?
Growing up in the res, you know, I never saw DJing. The only time I saw DJing was my dad. And I just love to see people come out with good vibes. Like recently went to Fort Hope, a Yabata First Nation, and we danced till 2 a.m. I was playing techno, house, and of course play some hip hop once in a while, but I'm just saying in the end of the day, I'm bringing that vibe, bringing that good vibe to them and showing them another way instead of having conflict, but also, you know, healing. And that's why I always tell everybody, have fun. But I noticed that there's a lot of DJs don't dance to the music, but I do.
They just stand there stoically.
They stand stoically, you know? Yeah, just pushing buttons. No, you got to dance to your music. You got to feel it, you know? Like, that's how I see it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
everyone gets into it. Like, I remember in Fort Hope, like, no one was dancing. And I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'll play my one song. Boom. Jump on the dance floor and start dancing. And soon enough, everybody comes together. I was like, holy smokes. Oh, wow.
You just need somebody to start, right?
Yeah.
And is that generally the reaction when you go to communities? Because, you know, I'm thinking about when I was a kid in the school dance.
Yeah.
And all the boys would stand on one side, the girls would stand on the other and fidget fingers and be like, I don't want to go first.
I remember that.
Is that sort of what you experienced?
Yep. I've experienced with people, you know, being shy. I remember this one person just being very, very shy for the whole hour. And then until I started going down, start breakdancing or start doing something, you know, fun and the other DJ is playing, and then I'm just like grooving. And soon enough, that person's slowly coming in and starting doing some like crip walk or something, you know, like it was just like, it was like surprising, but I was just like, wow, he went out of his shell. It just takes time.
It's a beautiful thing to see, particularly music that you've created, reach, you know, people where they start out shy and then they start to move their shoulders. It's sort of like a butterfly being born. Coming out of its shell, literally.
Yep.
How does it feel seeing that, like actually seeing that transformation?
I feel very proud of that. Like, I'm very happy to see, you know, a big change, even if it's not as big as you expect. You know, you see that one person out there who sees what you are doing. That's the beauty of dance, the beauty of music. You're bringing people together. It's coming back to like the full circle. Powwowing.
yeah, absolutely. How important do you think music is when it comes to our celebrations and coming together?
Well, I believe that we bring that celebration all year around. More importantly, I think it's important to stay grounded, because at the end of the day, we're all healing through a lot of things in the past, but also healing through music. And I think it's important to see that music, it's there for you.
Well, Joshua, thank you so much for your gift of music and for your time today.
Miigwech, thank you.
Joshua DePerry is a member of Long Lake 58 and a powwow techno DJ and producer and a mashup master. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. You can't have a truly great summer without a good book. Luckily, our favorite pop culture uncle, Richard Van Camp, is here and has your Indigenous reading list.
Richard Van Camp, CA, see honey, ho, Edmonton, day. Hello, my friends, it's Richard Van Camp. I was born and raised in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, and I'm broadcasting today from Treaty 6 Country in Edmonton, Alberta. I really want to start by honoring the late and great Lee Miracle. And Lee Miracle gave us the greatest advice ever. She said, writing will always be the best therapy. She said, the beauty of fiction is you can find in your life what has been stolen. You can mend in your life what has been broken. You can find your wings again through your writing. What I want to do today is I want to honor three books that I think fall into exactly where Lee Miracle wanted us all to be. And that is in a place of wonderment and healing, doing our best. So the last book I read just a week ago was written by Stephen Caffrey. It is called Stoneface, A Defiant Dene. Now, for those of you who don't know, Stephen Caffrey is our former NWT premier, devoted his life to politics. And I was shocked when I sat down and read his memoir. Because, you know, growing up, I'd always admired Mr. Caffrey. He was in all the headlines all the time, doing his best for Den and Day. And I was just on a panel with him last week at the Northwoods Writers Festival. And he said the reason he wrote Stoneface was because when he was 19, he realized that he didn't have the same emotions that other people his age were having about falling in love and getting a job and traveling. And he started to ask, why? Why am I so numb? Why do I have all this armor around myself? And he started to realize, as a residential school survivor, he had to shut down the best part of himself, that sacred dancing child. So Stoneface of Defiant Dene is really about reclaiming what was stolen and finding your way again through family, culture, traditions, ceremony. I'm really proud of Mr. Caffrey. I think that this is a work of incredible courage, and I think it's going to be very empowering and validating for other residential school survivors to come forward and share their story too. I'm really excited about Jessica John's debut novel, Bad Cree, because it shows the power of aunties, community, culture, faith, and traditions. The plot is about Mackenzie, a Cree young woman who keeps waking up holding things from her dreams. It's about a curse. I was just again up in Yellowknife with Jessica Johns for the Northridge Writers Festival. And when she described her novel, she described it as horror-esque. It's a little creepy, but I really appreciate what she said. She said, aunties make the world go round. And this is a book that shows you the power of aunties, the power of community. So please read Bad Cree. Another book that came out of left field for me was a publisher got in touch and said, can you read Michelle Porter's A Grandmother Begins the Story? And I sat down, it took me 2 days, and I'm here to tell you, A Grandmother Begins the Story by Michelle Porter is a Métis masterpiece. It's incredible. It follows 5 Métis women reclaiming their inheritances, and one of them is in the spirit world. If you love prose poetry, if you love the poetry of Christos, you're going to feel right at home with Michelle Porter's A Grandmother Begins the Story. I can't wait to hear the feedback from readers and from the community about how each of these writers are using their craft to reclaim what was almost stolen and what was almost lost.
Thanks, Uncle. I'm gonna head to the bookstore right now and then hit up the music store right after I pick up some fabric that I'll sew while watching TV. Happy summer, and from all of us at Unreserved, happy National Indigenous Peoples Day. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous, but we'll go out on one more dancing tune. Here's another one of Dave McLeod's picks. It's Siasin with Shine. This episode was produced by Kim Casher, Rhiannon Johnson, Laura Bone-Stubing, and Kenny Sharp. You can always find more on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved or download our podcast on the CBC Listen app or your favorite pod places. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. You can ask Namitnawi. Egosay.
Father Sky awakens me. Feel the rays that make me strong. Yeah.